evening, everyone. Welcome to the Yellow Dogs. So sweet to sit with you tonight.
Paul says you can't hear very well.
Paul, how now, brown cow? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go.
Need to speak up a little bit. So tonight I'd like to start with a quote from a British psychiatrist, Ian McGilchrist, and this is what he says. He said, "The world we know cannot be wholly mind independent, and it cannot be wholly mind dependent. What is required is an attentive response to something real and other than ourselves, of which we have only inklings at first, but which comes more and more into being through our response to it. If we are truly responsive to it, so we nurture it into being or not, in this it has something of the structure of love." And so this is where we're pointing ourselves. We're practicing responses to something real because we're touching what's real. We're touching the present moment where there is real. And so, and we touch something that certainly includes ourselves, but it's not all about ourselves. And we get a little inkling of it. And so when we're sitting and we're quiet and we're still and we develop enough concentration, then we're privy to some information about ourselves unlike in our everyday life. But it just only seems like little inklings, because the more we're committed to being quiet and still and really wanting to know what is true and what is not true, if we stay with that intent, if we stay with this practice of inquiry, where we're never satisfied that we know it. And what happens is that we completely begin to love it all. Thinking, oh, how could that be possible? But that's what the teachings point us to, that there is that possibility, the good, the bad, and the ugly, all of life can be known and loved. Doesn't sound right, does it? Last week, Kristen, I know you're out there, Kristen brought up a tool last week called gladdening. Thank you. Gladdening the heart. So without gladdening the mind, when it needs to be gladdened, Anolio, who is probably the most pronounced scholar of our times, says it's impossible for realization without it. The heart, the openness of the heart. So our hearts, when they're open, is the right effort in bringing to ourselves the happiness that we deserve. And there's a way to practice that. And that's what this practice does. And the Buddha teaches us that there are wholesome thoughts that will, if we practice them, that will enable us to touch that part of us that was never born or never dies. Wholesome thoughts, thoughts that connect us, opens our heart, makes us smile, melts us. We've been there. We know it. But the Buddha says there are also unwholesome thoughts that we need to know as well. And I think we probably know what those are because we seem to hang out with them more than the wholesome. This feeling of unworthiness, that we're not good enough, that we're always comparing and judging ourselves. It makes us miserable. And sometimes we don't even realize it's our own dialogue that we're saying to ourselves that perpetuates this suffering that's optional. That's what blows my mind. It's optional. It means it doesn't have to be that way. So the brain, I'm taking this information from Rick Hansen in his book, The Buddha Brain. And he says, of course, the brain is a complex organ, a physical system, like a muscle, gets stronger the more we exercise it. And so our attention is like a combination of a spotlight and a vacuum cleaner. And that sucks us in. It sucks us in through the six senses that we have been given to perceive all of life, which includes thinking in the Buddhist teachings. Everything we see, we hear, we smell, we taste, we touch, we think. It highlights what it lands on, that is the brain. The brain, it highlights what it lands on and then sucks it into our brain for better or worse, or whether we want it to or not. So the nature of the mind is so important to understand. Otherwise, we don't know how to live with it or to respond to it. So the brain takes its shape from what the mind rests upon. It's pliable. It can change. And why is that important? Well, we're studying the mind, and we keep resting our minds on unwholesome thoughts. And as we begin to really pay attention to the nature of the mind and what we're saying to ourselves, then that's the path out of that type of suffering. So we begin to just practice that. Noticing wholesome thoughts and unwholesome thoughts. And so unwholesome thoughts is that self-criticism, that worrying, the grumbling about life, hurts and stress. Well, then the brain, neuroscience says, then the brain will be shaped into greater what? Well, reactivity. This is neuroscience. We're more vulnerable to anxiety. We get moody. We narrow ourselves, narrow our possibilities of how we can live our lives. However, if we can train, and that's what we're doing here, if we can train resting our mind on the wholesome, because that's who we really are. That's why it's so powerful, because it's the truth. We all have Buddha nature. We are all completely beautiful, perfect. But what covers it? If that's true, then what am I doing? And I think what happens is, I know what happens, is we add all this nonsense to our minds and to our lives. And it distracts us from the beauty of life. And so that's what the practice does. It teaches us where to look that we can have a direct impact on our happiness. So, how to do this? Well, one of the things we know in practicing is we have to be wide awake. We have to recognize what is actually happening within. Now, I don't know about you, but before I started practicing, I did not have any tools along the way that enabled me to do that until I started this particular practice. It's not the only way, or the only practice, but this particular practice, because I've done it for so long, I understand with the practice what it brings. And another prerequisite to all of that is daily practice. It's kind of like trying to play the piano and not practicing enough. So the daily practice is a must, a commitment. So we can take in what Rick Tansen says, the author of the Buddha Mind, or Buddha's Brain. We can take in the optimistic parts of our life and pay more attention to them. Because this is the tendency of our brains. We hold on to the negative thoughts as if they are something we want to hang on to. But what we have forgotten to do is really be with the positive. Because the Buddha says what? There's 10,000 sorrows and there's 10,000 joys. But what's happened is we're off balance. And the practice certainly teaches us how to relate to the sorrows. But there's got to be some kind of balance of what we're doing to ourselves and saying to ourselves. So Rick says there's four steps. First of all is setting an intention, and that's a great tool, because once we set an intention, it just means that we are planting seeds of trying to remember to remember. And so intention is so important, because really it's the truth of everything behind what we say and we do. What is our intent? And so when we begin to understand how to use intention, it becomes stronger and we begin to rely on it more. But putting a priority. All right. This is my priority. I'm going to start looking at what I'm saying to myself. And then he says, when these mind states come up, we have the tool of rain. We know what to do with it. We don't want to push them away. We want to recognize them. We want to allow them. And then we're learning, instead of taking them to the mind, all this to the mind, we take it to the body. We're just changing it. Instead of thinking about life, we are beginning to know how to experience it. And we know how to experience it. We know when we look in our child's face, or we see the full moon, or even half of the moon, it brings joy within us. Natural joy, not superficial joy. So, raining on it, taking it to the body, investigating it, how does it feel? What does joy feel like? Being interested in it. Being really interested in it. Because that process nurtures us. It helps us. It supports our effort. And so Rick says to stay with it until it leaves. Because again, these positive things we disregard. We're not staying with them. We're not embodying them or giving them the time and space that they deserve. Oh, well, that's just positive. That's just, you know, we don't value it. And yet, all of a sudden, someone says, oh, yes, value that. It's very, very, very valuable. So, we don't want to cling to them. We don't want to try to keep them going other than their lifespan. But we do want to have an intention of where we stay with our joys. And we take them within ourselves. And we feel them completely. Intimate. They become intimate. And we look for what's real, you know. I can say if I get a new car, that makes me kind of happy for a while. Mm-hmm. But no, we're talking about a joy that has absolutely nothing to do with what's happening outside of ourselves. And I know you have felt that, and you know what I'm talking about. And so there's a way to support our effort in doing that. We're just off balance. We've got the capabilities. Now, this is one I hadn't heard before. He says, 4 is to link, and it's optional. I don't know what that means, but he says it's optional. He says, link positive and negative material. When you start it, focusing on it, in the positive, it uses positive thoughts and feelings to soothe and reduce and potentially replace negative ones. So we're kind of looking at both of them. He says, for an example, when you feel included, when you feel like, oh, okay, I am a part of all of this, he said, you can also go ahead and reflect when you felt lonely. Don't make it up, because we're looking at what's real. So that's why it's different than positive thinking that comes from the mind. It's a whole different process. So, and you can sense this experience making contact. But again, you have to see for yourself whether it works. This is just words until, again, practice, 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 but it's worth it. Taking in the good, he says, appreciating the little things. Oh, if there's one thing that this practice has helped me do more than anything is to pay attention to those little joys that we are experiencing every day. We happen to live on 7 acres in the hill country near Canyon Lake, and oh my goodness, you know, there's just so many delights in nature. And guess what? Nature's real. And so we need to put ourselves in positions, in places that enables it. And again, there's a big difference between happiness and joy. Happiness is conditional. We all have that. Nothing's wrong with it. But joy, that's all inclusive. And it doesn't matter what's going on outside or even inside if we understand what to do with our joys. And so he says, do it your way. This is very important because this is one of the things that enables us to do with time and practice is to rely on ourselves. No one is going to know your path. I always say Randy and I have been on the same path as far as this particular practice is concerned. But what wakes us up and what grabs us and what works and what doesn't work is very intimate. Very, very intimate. So learn what wakes you up. Get to know yourself in that way. Because we're all different in that way. Let's see. So making, or so make taking in the good a regular part of your life and your practice. And with that, I'll stop. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being such good listeners. Mm-hmm. And then now we get to open it up to you for clarification or comments or anything you want to say. Thank you.